Well, I am convinced that some people are acting very weird, very strange. Perhaps you've seen it. Maybe it's time to share some of those stories. I mean, I've seen all kinds of things, from people just zombie down in their car to just plain rudeness, just people uptight on planes. I've witnessed that too. I mean, I saw that a few weeks ago when I was traveling to another one of these many speaking engagements. The person sat in the very first front. It was a Southwest flight. Very first front aisle. And as you know, you can't put anything under your seat there. Everything's got to go overhead when you're there, because the only thing in front of you is a wall. And the flight attendant said, you got to put your bags up. And the person went ballistic. And I'm seeing a lot of strange things. Maybe you are. So share some of those stories with us. And we'll come back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to the open line portion of Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Norrie, and let's go right to the calls. We'll start by going to Henry in Sun Valley, California, west of the Rockies. Hey, Henry, good morning.
Hi, George.
How are you?
George, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, I know you're a big Stratego fan, because I heard you talking about it.
And I just got it, by the way. I ordered it in the mail, and I got it. I may never open it up, Henry, but I have it.
Oh, well, George, I'm saying, since you're an officer, you should play against some enlisted people or against somebody in a different branch, and then you could do that great tri-service branch versus thing for the dominance of the Stratego title.
That would be intriguing.
Now, George, may I just ask you, what is your favorite Stratego strategy?
Well, I put the flag in the background.
Oh, I definitely keep it towards the rear.
I surround it with the bombs.
Oh, I never do that.
Not only that, though, but as I surround it with the bombs, I always have a number 7. What is that?
Towards the middle, you get about 4 of them.
Okay, I put a number 7 in there with the flag in case one of the 8s, those miners, break through and blow up the bomb.
Now, George, do you like to play where you have to declare your troops, or do you play solely by memory?
By memory.
By memory. So you prefer fully level 3 going all the way out there?
Yep, my opponent sets it up their way, I set it up mine, and then you have to remember exactly what you're doing.
Well, that's great, George, because so many people don't play the full game, and that is really how it's supposed to be played. And I'm just so thankful that you took this call. Thank you so much, George.
Okay, Henry, it's a little game I used to play when I was a kid. It's called Stratego. A lot of you probably remember it, and it's set up where the object of the game is to capture it's a board game, is to capture the other person's flag. And they give you little tiny soldiers, but they look like blocks, and they're pictures of the little soldiers on the other side that your opponent does not see. So you scatter them all over the place, and you get a general, you get a colonel, you get all that, and it's by power. You know, a general is a number 1, for example, and nothing beats a 1 unless he walks into a bomb, then he gets blown up. But the only thing that can beat a bomb is one of these little 8s, a miner. Anyway, it's a fun little game. I got it when I was a kid. And I think board games are going away. I think video games are destroying those old board games that you used to play with your family, you know, whether it was Monopoly or anything. And I went out and bought a Clue game, too. They're in boxes. I haven't even opened them up. But you know what? When the family comes over for Thanksgiving or something, maybe we'll pop it open and do something like that. Let's go next. We'll pick it up by going to Andy in White Plains, New York, on the wild card line. Hey, Andy, thanks for calling.
Good morning.
Morning to you.
I have an interesting theory, which I believe is correct, but I'm not a UFO expert, so I'm trying to find someone who might be able to steer me as whether I'm right or wrong.
Okay.
If you remember correctly, General Ramsey had this picture of this balloon sitting at his feet saying, hey, this is it.
The pieces.
And then there's been a whole bunch of exposés of which I'm never sure which one is right, whether the balloon is 30 feet or 600 feet long. But one of the things that's driving me nuts is that every time you try to read any story about the balloon, they say it's traveling at 20, 30 to 40,000 feet across the United States, across the ocean to the Soviet Union. The problem I have with that is any fighter aircraft of that time could easily shoot this damn thing down at 20 to 30 to 40,000 feet. Because, you know, how the hell would they be able not to be able to see it? It's got a reflector on it.
That's right.
So I'm having a problem with the fact that this can't seem to be something that would be true. You can't fly across the ocean and not be seen and not be shot down at that altitude and supposedly the jet stream, which is anywhere from 50 to 250 miles an hour. That 600-foot mammoth, that has some interesting properties, which I believe could easily pass 60 to 100,000 feet and be out of range of any fighter aircraft at that time. But they have this expose about this guy getting up and saying Ramsey is right. This monolith, this what do you call it? This toy manufacturer made this balloon with scotch tape, no less, balsa wood, and tin foil. But if you remember back in those days, you had Juicy Fruit, you had spearmint chewing gum wrapped up in tin foil, you had a pack of cigarettes that were wrapped up in tin foil. People knew what tin foil was. So why? And then you have Jesse Marcel, who brought this home to his son and wife, showed them what it was, and they saw this material that was like tin foil, but you couldn't destroy it.
That's right. You could crumple it up, and it would come right back to its original shape.
I mean, you crumple tin foil, and it looks like what it is, a wrapped-up piece of crap.
Yeah, anyway, there's new materials now.
This guy gets on TV recently and says, you know, Ramsey is right. This is what it is. And if you think about it, how the hell could something made of scotch tape, tin foil, and balsa wood survive the temperatures that are at 60 to 100,000 feet, because you got anywhere from minus 50 to 150 if I keep reading different things, so I'm not 100% sure up there. And then you have wind speeds, again, anyway, from 50 to 250 miles an hour.
The wind speeds alone.
If you look at any of the media when we have a hurricane and what the hurricane winds do on ground level, what the heck do you think they would do to a balsa wood scotch tape piece of crap?
It's like a kite, isn't it? It would just tear it to shreds.
That's right. So Ramsey, whatever he was trying to pull with that stunt was the biggest snow job I've ever seen. And then you have this, the last interview I recently saw, which I had never seen before, was this interview that was done with this June Crane who worked at Wright-Patterson for 30 years.
Right.
She turned around and said she saw the same material. So now you have Jesse Jr., Jesse Sr., and June Crane saying they saw the same piece of material. There's three people who saw it, and all three people knew about tin foil based on Juicy Fruit, spearmint, or a pack of cigarettes.
Well, Andy,
your outlook was.
I agree with you. I don't know what happened at Roswell, but, you know, the old balloon theory to me doesn't hold water much. As you know, though, you know, there was this fear that during World War II, the Japanese actually launched balloons on us, and they had explosives in them. And, you know, the aim was to put it up in the jet stream, hope that it would hit the western coast, Los Angeles and other areas, and they'd land and blow up and kill a few people and just terrorize Americans. And, you know, they did do that. I always wondered if perhaps one of these objects that might have been spotted at Roswell might have been one of those. But, you know, the more people I've talked to doing this program especially, I'm convinced that there's something else that happened at Roswell, and it's much bigger. Or, you know, why else would the government change its story so many times, which it has? Remember the dummies and all that? It doesn't make any sense. Let's go to Dave in Orlando, Florida, east of the Rockies. Hey, Dave, thanks for calling.
Hey, how's it going? I guess Luis is gone, huh?
Yeah, she is.
Okay. Well, I had a question for her, but you're pretty knowledgeable, so I'm going to pass this by you.
Okay.
You know, as a young child, as most young children are, they seem to be open and they see things that adults don't see. And as a young child in elementary and junior high, I would have these experiences where there was something outside my window with lots of tentacles that scared the bejeebies out of me. And I would run into my parents' room, and it would move from my room to my parents' room window. And I'd wake them up, and they wouldn't see it. So, of course, they're telling me, you know, there's no monsters, there's no ghosts, go back to bed. And I would sleep in the hallway because there were no windows. So as time went on, of course, your parents convince you that, you know, that's just nightmares, you're having nightmares, you know, you know, and you get that out of your mind and you lose that connection. Right. But I'm a very vivid dreamer. And when I was in college, I took a bunch of dream study tests to learn how to, you know, write my dreams down and learn how to remember them. And now I'm to the point to where I can have a dream and I can remember them fully. And I have very, very, very vivid dreams to the point sometimes I will wake up and have to call my friends to make sure what I dreamt didn't really happen because it felt so real.
Yeah.
And my biggest question for her was, there are times, and it happens at least twice a month, to where I will be dead asleep and I will hear my name so loud that it wakes me up. And I get up to look at my house because I live alone. There's nobody here. And I was just wondering, I was hoping that I was going to be able to catch her so she could give me some insight on what that is. Now, I believe in ghosts. I believe in UFOs. I've never seen one. Never been experienced to one. I've gone with ghost hunters to haunted houses and tried to do the experience because I'm kind of a confrontational person. I guess if I saw one, I wouldn't run. I would face it. But those things don't ever happen to me. But my confusing question is hearing my name really loud to the point to where it jerks me out of bed and I think somebody's in my house. And I understand that's happened to you a few times.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I get this gong sound in my head, David, and it wakes me up.
Yeah, and has anybody explained that to you, what that might be?
Well, you know, somebody sent me an email and says, you have a brain tumor. And I went, no, I don't.
I mean, it's even been so bad that I've had knocks on my door so loud that I got up and put my robe on and answered the door and nobody was there.
Yeah, that's weird. Now, these gongs, I have always thought in the beginning, it's the UPS man, it's somebody at the door. So I would have, in the earlier days, I quickly get out of bed, which is a horrible feeling when you have to get up right away. And you run out there, and there's no truck, there's no package, there's nobody. And, you know, eventually I realized, now this is a gong sound that I'm hearing when I'm sleeping. I thought maybe I even had a short circuit in my alarm. And that wasn't the case either. But there's something in your head that has this sound, at least to me, it's a gong. Now, maybe in your case, it's your name that you hear.
Yeah, loud and clear. Like, it's Dave. Like, I need to wake up. And and I live alone, and there's nobody here, and it's just the most confusing thing. And like I said, I have very, very vivid dreams. I'm to the point to where I don't even have to write them down. I can remember them. I can recall dreams from years back. And I have dreams that most people would probably call nightmares that would scare the bejeebies out of most people, but
night
they don't scare me anymore. They're part of that experience. And to be honest with you, I love going to bed because I know I'm going to have an extraordinary dream. And a lot of my dreams are flying. I can control my flying in my dreams. I don't crash to the ground and I don't hit the ground. I just, you know, okay, I know I'm dreaming, so I'm going to fly, and I will have the most wonderful experience in my dreams flying, and then wake up that next morning and go, man, that was absolutely awesome. For me, it's like when I go to bed, I have these extraordinary movies that go through, but one of the strangest things is if I'm having a dream, a lot of times I will wake up, and when I go back to sleep, the dream will continue right where it left off as a storyline.
Yeah, that's good, and you've got that strong ability to do that. The controlling of your dreams, of course, is lucid dreaming when you know that you're dreaming. And, you know, not a lot of people can do that, so keep working at it. In terms of the yelling out of your name, who's doing it or why, that's a good question. Maybe one day that's going to help you. It's going to save you. I don't know, as this gong thing, maybe that'll help me. Let's go to Los Angeles. We've got Paul there on the wild card line. Hey, Paul, go ahead.
Hello, George. I got a question. I know you don't believe in, coincidence?
No. But I think everything happens for a reason.
Yeah. Well, you remember when Blackwater was trying to open a training base in Southern California?
I recall it, yes.
Yeah, it was a few years back. And then there was a lot of residents there that were protesting it and didn't want it to go in, and they were doing everything they could to protest it.
Right.
Then just, what is it, kind of odd that a fire started about a year later, 2 years later, wiped all the protesters out. There was nobody left to protest. Did Blackwater ever go in?
Interesting. I don't know. Plus, I think they changed their name, didn't they?
Yeah, they changed their name. They changed a whole lot of other stuff and went low-key. But nothing was ever talked about. Nobody ever brought it up. But a lot of those people were protesting Blackwater going in, got burned out in that fire.
They're gone. Yeah, that's an interesting
story.
And now,
got the same thing up here in Colorado. A friend of mine was transplanted from California up there, and he's been pressured by real estate people wanting to sell. The government wants to move in. They want to buy your property and all this other stuff, pressuring them. And he kept refusing. And now he's one of the people who got burned out.
What did they want to buy the property for, do you know?
They wanted a right-of-way or something like that.
How many homes were they trying to buy?
He was talking with three of his neighbors, and he said they're getting calls from the real estate people, too, wanting to buy the property. So the government wants it, but wouldn't get an answer why. And I thought, well, that's kind of odd.
And now he's wiped out because of the fire?
Yeah, they're wiped out in a fire. I haven't been able to contact them since.
Oh, my God. That's okay.
And then I just heard in a little news input or whatever, news flash, news talk or whatever, that they were saying when they rebuild, the people that can't afford to rebuild are going to face all new restrictions. And if they can afford to rebuild, it's going to be a lot more expensive because they've got to redo a lot of things.
And let's hope the insurance companies come through for all those folks. Skype, Robert's with us in New Brothels, Texas. Robert, go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on the show. For a late night radio guy, you have too relaxing a voice. I think you make it difficult sometimes for us to stay up late and listen to the show.
Is that your covet?
No, I'm sorry. I'm teasing you a little bit. I'm a big fan of the show, and I just wanted to let you know that I was at Bilderberg this year. It was a great protest, largest protest in the 58-year history. I do the Funkmaster 5 YouTube channel. We put a new video up about Bilderberg if anybody wants to check it out.
Okay, that's you. Okay, good. You do a good job with that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
You do a good job with that.
Well, thanks a lot, George. You do a great job, and we love listening to you. My girlfriend and I stay up late and listen to you, and sometimes you put us right to sleep. Your show is interesting, but you have that airline pilot voice, but I just want to take the opportunity to tell people, hey, if you get the opportunity to be active and spread the word about Bilderberg Group, the awareness is growing and it is becoming mainstream. A lot of mainstream news outlets were forced to report it. We had Associated Press out there, even though they didn't do a story, but we also had Washington Post and Washington Times out there, and over 58 years, biggest protest ever. So I think
it's growing.
Yeah, it is growing. People who really have been looking at, we had Jim Tucker out there and we did an interview with him, and he was out there, chasing this group 50 years before it was ever popular.
Well, and of course, Alex Jones is always there. Hey, we've got this break. We got to hit it. And we'll be right back. Anyways, we're going to be back in a moment with more open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Now, we take your text messages, of course, and Tom's back in the Los Angeles studio. He's got one for us. What do you have there, Tommy?
Hey, George, this is from Samantha in Fort Wayne. It says, George, been unemployed for a year and about to lose my house. Just got a great job last week. What are your thoughts on luck? Was this luck, or was it meant to be that I'd land a job all along?
It was meant to be. There's no, well, there is luck, but not in this particular case. You're qualified to do what you were doing, and it happened, and fate stepped in, and just run with it.
So where does luck step in?
Well, luck is if you go to Vegas and stuff like that. But I think fate plays a great role for a lot of things.
Well, if you win in Vegas, is there fate?
Not really. I think you're playing odds there.
I think this is a close line.
It is. Okay, thanks, Dummy.
Thanks.
Next up, let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma. Rick is with us on the wild card line. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Well, thank you, George, for taking my call.
Oh, you are so welcome. Welcome back.
And I wanted to thank you. I have had trouble sleeping for years, and I'm a ham radio operator like Art Bell. And I just wanted to thank you for a wonderful show. I don't always agree with all of your people that you have on, but it's made it so much fun for those of us who can't sleep well at night.
Well, and here's the important thing. You don't have to agree with these guests. You know, I just want you to come up with your own views on what they say, whether you agree with them or not. And that's the important thing, without people fighting, chastising, screaming at each other, which we don't do on this show.
I agree with that. I just wanted to thank you because it's been the most entertaining evenings I've ever had, and I've wanted to call for many years. And I started listening to your show in 2008, and I stay up late and work on hobby stuff, and it's been so much fun. And especially the stuff when you have the people on from NASA, it's been wonderful. And I know Ian Punnett took a real big hit for having Max Brooks on that one night, but it was the funniest show, and I about fell out of my bed laughing a couple of times because it was so entertaining. So you have a vote in the positive category for Ian Punnett, and I hope he's doing well with his tinnitus problem.
Yeah, I haven't heard from him. I'm going to see him in October in Minneapolis, so I'll get more information on that. Of course, you know, he still does a Sunday for us every month.
Well, I appreciate that, and I'll just let you go on to other callers and see what they have to say. But thank you so much for an entertaining evening.
Okay, Rick, you are very welcome. Very nice of you. Let's go to Northville, Michigan. I got a nice racetrack there. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Hi, George. It's really a pleasure to speak with you. I'd like to echo what the other caller just said. I really appreciate how fair you are with everybody.
Well, that's okay. They still have the horse racetrack out there in Northville?
They do. Yeah, I just live a walking distance from there, and they do the horse races there all the time.
God, I used to love that, but I really loved, Richard, Parmenter's Cider Mill.
Oh, yeah, that's also a walking distance, and, you know, every September and October they bring in those apples, and, oh, boy, it's the most delicious stuff.
It's the best. It really is. What's new?
Hey, you know, I've never talked to anybody about this before, and it's happened to me back it's been about 40 years ago, but I grew up in the California Bay Area, and I was 16 years old, and I was getting ready to prepare to teach the Scout Patrol about astronomy. So I was sitting out in the bleachers at the football field there in Livermore, California, and I was just looking at the stars. It was a really bright night, and the moon was out, and it was probably like 2 a.m, so I could see the stars really good to get prepared for teaching the constellations. And as I was sitting there, I had to kind of do a double take because I saw somebody just starting to run right down the middle of the field, and they just were like out of nowhere.
Hmm.
And he fell over, and I thought, well, somebody's in trouble. So I, you know, being a scout and everything, I got up and went to say, hey, are you okay? And I just could, as I was getting closer, I was walking off the bleachers and onto the field. He was just laying there, like, panting and breathing really hard. I said, are you okay? And he just kind of lifted his hand, waved like affirmative, like he was okay. And as I got closer, I could see he was kind of covered in like a powdery, like white powder or something. I said, are you okay? And he says, are you Richard? And I kind of startled me, yeah. And he goes, can you help me? Yeah, what's up? What's the matter?
Yeah.
He goes, and then the first thing he asked me was really strange. He goes, does your mother do the baking? I said, does my mother do the baking? Yeah, does she do it? I said, like cake or cookies? Yeah, does she have a flour? I said, yeah. I need to have a sack of flour. Can you do that? Can you help me? And I said, sure. I guess I can. And then I said, well, what can you do? He goes, well, I need your help. I need to do something, but I need your help. I said, well, what is it? And he goes, well, I don't know how to explain it other than, then he said, well, I said, well, who are you? And he says, well, he goes, I'm a dimension walker. And I said, well, what is that, a dimension walker? And he said, well, yeah. And he goes, oh, you would call it time traveler. And of course, I'm getting a little freaked out by that.
Sure. And he still looks like he's powdery. Right?
Yeah, like a powder, and he kind of gets up and shakes off and says, well, I need you to take me out to Vasco Road. I said, well, what do you need? He says, well, we need to stop by, and I need your help, and I need to get out towards the Vasco Road. And I said, well, yeah, I know where that's at.
I'm not sure I'd bring him in my car, Richard, but I assume you did, huh?
Yeah, and the interesting thing was when I said, well, you know, and I, of course, I had some curiosity then as I was driving him down to Vasco Road, and I asked him, well, where are you from? And the interesting thing is he would never give me a direct answer, but he would always give me a satisfying answer. And
okay.
When I asked him, well, where are you from? And he said, well, let me ask you this, Rich. What would you consider ancient? And I said, well, like Egypt or, you know, the Egyptians or maybe Rome or, you know, the Aztecs. And he goes, yeah, okay, well, to me, you're ancient. And that's what he would say. And he would say really interesting answers. They weren't the answers, but they were satisfying.
And they were thought-provoking. They made you think.
Yeah, and so I took him out to Vasco Road, and out behind Vasco Road, there used to be a guy, and he goes, can you go by Pico Pico? And I started laughing because only the teenagers, there used to be this, like, vagrant, like, hobo that lived out in, like, a shack out by some trees out on Vasco Road. He goes, you know, the back access road by Pico Pico? I started laughing because only a kid knew who he was. I said, yeah, I know where that's at. He goes, I need to get out to Lawrence Livermore Lab. I said, well, okay. So I drove him out there, and he said, I need you to just wait for me. So he waited, and he said, it's going to be an hour or so. So he came back, and he had, like, a shoebox with him.
And you have no idea who he is, right?
No, I have no idea who he is. But, you know, one of the things that was interesting is, like, when I was driving down East Avenue to go out there, I had the radio on, and Elton John's song Honky Cat came on, and I reached over to turn up, and he started beating, like, he knew his song. And I said, well, how do you know his song? He goes, well, because we can access genetic endowment. I said, well, what do you mean by you can access genetic endowment? He goes, well, you can experience the things that your ancestors experience.
Interesting. And, so he goes into this place. You wait for him for an hour. A guy you don't know. So you're sitting in your car, and he comes back with what?
He comes back with something like the size of a shoebox. It's a box that's like the size of a shoebox. And then I lived out near the Lawrence Livermore Lab, so he said, now we got to get the flower. And I said, okay. And so I went in the house. Got the sack of flour. He goes, I've got to get back to the football field. So I went back to the football field, and so I asked him, I said, well, what do you mean by this genetic endowment? He goes, let me answer it this way. He goes, the things that your ancestors experienced, you can remember. And I said, what do you mean by that? He goes, well, you can pass on your experience, but you can't pass on your wisdom.
So you can pass on memory genetically.
Yeah, you can pass on memory genetically, but you can't pass on your wisdom. And I said, well, what does that mean? He goes, well, the genetics, your wisdom comes in your later years when you're older. But by then, your descendants are already there, so they don't get that memory of your wisdom. They just get the memory of your experience.
Richard, what did he do with the flower?
Well, that's the interesting thing. We got back to the football field. By now, it's like 4 in the morning, so it's still dark.
Okay, so he's holding this box that he got from inside.
He's holding this box, and he takes the flower, and he sprinkles it all. He has me help him to rub it in his hair and all over his clothes and all over the box. And it was just looking up in the sky. And you know how when you look up in the sky and you can see, if you look up long enough, you can see how a satellite moves across the sky?
Yeah, I've done that a lot.
Yeah, and, well, we just waited there, and we saw something that was moving across the sky. It was a little bit different, but if he saw that, he said, thank you for your help, Richard. And he started running down the middle of the field, and he was running underneath how that beam in the sky was going, and he was running really fast, and all of a sudden, poof, and all I see is this flash of powder, and he was gone.
No.
Yeah.
You're pulling my leg, Rich.
No. And I've never talked to anybody about this. This happened back when I was 16 years old. So this has been, what, 38 years ago? I'm 65 now.
Wow. Yeah. He might have been a dimensional traveler.
Because he said that he was a dimension walker. That's the way he... And the interesting thing, I could tell he spoke English, but he said he announced everything, kind of like, you know, it wasn't speaking like we speak. Like, when you say, what do you know? I mean, you mean, what do you know?
What do you think was in the box, Rich?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because it was only the size of like a shoebox, a little bigger than a shoebox, but he went in somehow. He got into the back of a Lawrence National Laboratory, so who knows what goes on in there.
And, I mean, and somebody let him in, right?
He must have got in somehow.
Exactly, because that's pretty tight. Well, that would have been great to find out what was in that box, but he just, poof, disappeared, and all you saw was a cloud of flour that was left. That's strange. What a great time traveler story, though. Anthony is in St. Louis, east of the Rockies. Hey, Anthony, how are you?
Ahoy, Skipper. George.
Hot enough?
Hot enough? Nice to talk to you.
You too. It's hot enough for you, huh?
Oh, my. It's the end of the world. But
miserable.
My story, I had a very satanic experience a few nights ago, and I just had to get it off my chest.
Sure thing. What happened?
I haven't told you. The last story I told you was on Halloween night with the Kentucky house with the knives.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was freaky. This is downright horrific.
Uh-oh. What happened?
I started the day by looking around on YouTube because I got sent a link to some songs. And under Section 107 of the 1976 Copyright Allowance, you can use songs for the purpose of comment, teaching, or criticism. And there were songs by Rihanna. The Disturbia song is just as clear backwards as it is forwards with a satanic message. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just not deaf. So you can hear it. I advise your viewers to look into this kind of stuff. So I started for a few hours going through things like that. And then I stumbled across a website talking about the Antichrist and how he's here. And it said there's only two criteria in the Bible that identify the Antichrist in modern times. The first one is he would speak from a high podium, but it would be blasphemous. The second one is he will deny that Jesus is the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not making any allegations or any accusations, and I don't know anything, but the only person that fits those two things is the current Pope. And I say that because his staff, which no other pope has used, you know how they use that staff with a crucifix on it?
Right, yeah.
His is, have you seen the weird bent one that he uses?
I've seen it, but I haven't even noticed it, really.
That can be taken as an inverted cross, which is a staple in satanic rituals. Now, maybe that's just, you know, coincidental. But the second one is he will deny that Jesus is the Son of God. As a cardinal, he had written 16 books where most of the points were that as the Catholic Church should recognize the Judaism belief that Jesus isn't the Messiah but a prophet, and that deserves as much looking into as the Catholicism belief of that he is.
Ah.
So that fits both of them. So I'm just putting that out there. So I'm not saying anything, but it is what it is. So I go to lay down at night, and I have a metal crucifix nailed to my wall to the left of my bed, and I have a ceramic one behind my bed.
Okay, so you're pretty religious, right?
Well, I believe in a higher power. I'm not sure what it is as far as if a man who knows nothing about it can put a label on it. You know what I mean? So I'd rather believe my God's my God. But in the middle of the night, me and my wife are woken up to a sound of crashing metal and crashing ceramic or glass or something. We look around, we flip the lights on. It's 3:33 in the morning on the dot. F666,
yeah.
And we don't see anything. So we just go back to bed with one eye open, didn't get a whole lot of sleep that night because the dogs went crazy, and my dogs don't bark. They went crazy. We come back up here, and next day, and I look, and the metal cross has destroyed. It was the two, you know, arm bars were held together by a rivet, and there was a metal medallion welded onto it. It had all been destroyed, ripped apart, the weld off.
Wow.
So I've just attributed, well, maybe, you know, gravity finally got to a weld, but I think I made it myself. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then when I was looking, something fell behind my bed, the ceramic cross was laying on the floor behind my bed, nailed to the wall again.
Yeah, what are the odds of both of them falling?
And, well, It's a Christian symbol that when they like are identifying the cross and the nails, that the ends of the nails were bent up. I nailed both those nails straight in so I could hang the swing, you know, like the piece of string.
Yeah.
But both of the nails had been bent up, which is impossible. And then the next night, last night, I had the worst sleep paralysis that I thought I was going to die, and I was actually asking to die because I've had it before, but I was awake in my eyes, but I couldn't move my body. This time last night, I was actually astrally projecting myself because my wife was in the guest bedroom sleeping, so she didn't disturb me. And I walked in there, and I grabbed a flashlight. I was flashing it in my eyes to try and wake me up. I was doing everything, and all I kept saying was, wake up, wake up. And this went on for what seemed about 2 hours of me stumbling around my house, dipping my head in the toilet, turning on the gas range to try and burn myself. Nothing happened. Thank God she came in to go to bed and woke me up, and that's how that ended. And now I'm going to stay up tonight listening to Coast and drinking Mountain Dew.
I love it. Sounds like you've had one heck of a couple days, Anthony. You got to be very careful about that. We don't have enough time to take another call, but we will when we come back. But I want to tell you a little bit about what's in store, of course, for the rest of the week. And make sure you're part of the program. Stuart Wild back. He's John B. Welsh, guest on Saturday, talking about some very strange things. I'm on first Sunday of the month. I'll be on with a split show. Barbara Marks Hubbard joining us, talking about 2012. And also Dr. Ken Druck joins us. The Real Rules of Life. Get ready for that. And, of course, it's Emerging Artist Night on Sunday. So make sure you're part of that program as well. And then the rest of the week, of course, Sir Charles Schulz joins us as we talk more about Mars. Chris Duane joins us on our Tuesday show as we talk a little bit about what's happening with the government. What are they trying to do to us? And then we've got a paranormal investigator on Wednesday. We start our Shape Up North America program on Thursday. Plus, we talk about Atlantis, and there's much more to come. We'll be back.